Thank you.
Hi, I'm grateful to be at this meeting. Thank you for asking me. It's good to see you. My name is Jeff. I am an addict. And congratulations to all the birthdays and welcome to the newcomer. I think your name was Sasha. Anyway, a little bit about myself. I've been sober since 1985, August 6, 1985. So I just celebrated 36 years. And I love Narcotics Anonymous. And if life, and you know, if it wasn't for NA, I'd have never, I mean, I still go to lots of meetings and I still sponsor guys, and it's such a big part of my life, you know. And without NA, I'd probably I'd be dead or in jail, most likely dead. I don't think I'd have lived this long. A little bit about myself before I got here. Why am I here? Because I'm a junkie, thief, burglar. I don't know any other way to live before I got here. And I did a lot of stupid stuff and got in a lot of trouble. And I'm very blessed, very lucky to be here. If life is fair, you know, we all know life isn't fair, but if it was, I'd be dead or in jail, like I mentioned. And, you know, I have a really blessed life today because of the 12 steps of this program, the fellowship, the friends. I think Nikolai knows my friend John Patton, and I see him every day at the same meeting every day, and we go to every day to a meeting. And before I got here, I just didn't know how to live. I mean, near the end, I was sleeping on a dirt floor and running the streets, and that was 1984, part of 85, or 83, 84, and 85, and it was a crazy life, you know. I was into rugs. Now that's the strange one, but all my connections were from Iran, and they wanted me to trade them rugs, and they'd give me dope, and they had no word for it in Iranian, so they called it Dava medicine. And I was just involved in a lot of crazy stuff, but you know, all I knew how to do was get loaded, and I came first. This disease is very, very, very self-centered. And I see part of that carrying on into my sober life, in my clean life sometimes. So what happened is I got arrested for all kinds of stuff, burglary, and they had me on suspicion of tons of stuff, but they really couldn't prove anything. But there I was in the courtroom. You know, I'd spent 6 months in jail, and they wanted to lock me up for 5 to 10 years because of all the stuff I was involved in. And, you know, I can give you a big, you know, war story, but I don't know if that's so important. We all know what we're doing here. You know, my story may be different than yours, but the disease is the same in all of us. You know, the incomprehensible demoralization. And that, I can guarantee you, is the same across the board, how we felt. And there is a step zero to this program, and that's this shit has got to stop. And, you know, maybe I was on a dirt floor, maybe you were in a high rise. It doesn't matter. You know, the disease is the same. And we all felt, you know, when the jig was up and we had to look at ourselves, we got a little moment of clarity that came from somewhere, you know, and we all felt that incomprehensible demoralization, like, what the hell am I doing? That's the same across the board, no matter where you were in your addiction. It's the same. So it's not so much where we've been, but how can we help each other go forward? You know, although our experiences will definitely benefit others, you know, but it's like the experience I have in being clean all these years is the most important thing, I think. How do you live your life doing this thing? I didn't have a clue. And when I was in the courtroom, there was a guy that went up before me, and they were getting ready to sentence him. I'm in an orange jumpsuit. When you're in jail, they give you these really weird orange jumpsuits. I was in handcuffs. My hair was about four different colors. It was, you know, the goth punk thing back then. And I was in the courtroom, and they offered this guy that went up before me rehab. And I heard that, and I'm like, what is that? But all I heard was not jail. They said rehab, caught my attention. I'm like, what are they talking about? They offered this guy rehab, and he goes, I need to think about it for a few minutes. And the judge goes, well, you can think about it for another 6 months in county. Next. Who was next? I was. So I thought it would be really smart and intelligent if I stood right up and asked for it. And the whole courtroom thought that that was hilarious. But the judge looked at my record and asked me point blank, all these charges are drug related. And I had to think about it for a second, but I said, yes, they are. I did everything I'm accused of in order to get more dope. And her and me and the public defender, I couldn't afford a lawyer. Got public defender is a free defense lawyer that they give out to people in San Francisco and United States. And we got together and we came to an agreement. But she also said, if I see you again, I'm going to double your time. So make use of this great opportunity I'm giving you. And immediately my mind went to, yeah, I fooled the system. Little did I know what was in store for me. I had no idea. And they shipped me off to this program up here we got called Walden House. And man, after 3 or 4 weeks, I was really still a little sick. I mean, physically, I was still kicking heroin and methadone, and I had the DTs from alcohol. I was a real mess. And after 2 or 3 weeks of Walden House, I started thinking jail looked better because nobody would leave me alone up there. They're like, how do you feel? What's going on with you? And if anybody's been to rehab, you know, they want to know. And I thought, I didn't know what was in store for me. So, you know, they were all asking me all kinds of questions, and I'd be in these little groups and they'd be like wanting to know what's up with me. And I wouldn't say anything. And, you know, I was just like, you know, my attitude was none of your business, you know. What's going on with me? And that was me. You know, I hated everybody. I was an equal opportunity hater. I hated everybody equally. And, you know, they suggested I go to meetings, and you know how we are in meetings. People reach out their hand. Hi, I'm so-and-so. Welcome to the program. And I'd be like, looking at them like, are you crazy? I'm not touching you. Or the guys that want to come up and hug you. It's like, hey, you better go sit down, man. And that was me in like early sobriety, early clean time, because I didn't know, you know, what to do. I didn't know how to live my life. But behind all that attitude was straight up fear, straight up fear. And I think there's only two things that guide me in this life, and it's fear or love, you know. And every morning I direct my thoughts to those I would help, and I ask God for a little help, and I just get on with my day. And I'm doing pretty good these days. You know, I went through a bad breakup a couple of years back, and that set me flying. But, you know, the one thing I could do above all else, because I thought I was like, just was stay clean. If I could stay clean through that, you know, then I was doing myself a service, and I was doing those that come after me a service, because the experiences we have in this program will definitely help somebody else. I didn't know I could go through breakups. I didn't know I could go through relationships. I mean, I had girlfriends when I was using, but they were just dope fiends like me. But anyway, so early recovery wasn't fun. You know, I'm in Walden House, and I don't know what really changed me around, other than I started to listen to other people that had more experience than me. And that's the thing, you know, you don't know how to live your life. And there's people here to help you with that, man. Lots of people. And there were people that, you know, once I melted down a little bit and opened up a bit, you know, that were like, you know, like when I was at Walden House and I wouldn't talk and I wouldn't let anybody near me because I was so angry at the world. A counselor took an interest in me up there, and we used to go out and have coffee all the time. And he goes, what are you doing here, man? You know, you want to go back to jail? You want to live that life again? I think you're smart enough. I didn't know I had any intelligence. He goes, I think you're smart enough to know that that's not a life you want to go to anymore. Think about it, you know? And he would check in with me all the time. It was the first guy that showed me any kind of love. I mean, my mom and my parents and my family cut me off like 5 years before I got clean. And there's a happy ending to that story. My mom, I hated. I mean, there's more to that story. I'll get to that later. But, you know, you just... all that anger and fear I had, you know, was like it was a blocker from God. It was a blocker from my spiritual life. And, you know, in some of the literature I read that says there come a time when no human power is going to keep you clean. So, you know, so I love the spiritual life that I've developed in NA, you know, and the people I have. And I'm blessed. I still have a sponsor. He's got like 40 years. I got 36. And I picked him because he's been through a lot of the same experiences I have. And he's a good guy, you know, and I learned from him. And I had another sponsor before that that showed me a lot of love as well and taught me how to, like, you know, let go of that hate and fear. I mean, like, I carried that for a long time. And I didn't work steps for in this program for the first 5 years. Now, don't do that. Don't wait. This is very, you know, it's probably the most important thing you can do is keep working and working the steps, man. And at 5 years clean, I hadn't worked steps. I'd go to meetings, but, you know, I hadn't really done much. And, you know, as a result of being clean, I went to college and I didn't know I had a brain left. And I graduated with a 3.95. I don't know what the grade point average out there is, but 4.0 is the best you can get out here. And I graduated with a 3.95. I had no idea I had any intelligence left. I mean, you know, and it was all in computer technology. And, you know, and the only thing I knew about computers before I got sober was how to steal them, you know, so I've come a long way. But I, you know, I didn't work steps, and I was going out with this girl and she broke up with me and I had nothing to fall back on. And I just ended up flipping out. I live near this park here. I'm about, well, I'm across the street from it actually, called Golden Gate Park. And I ended up in that park just like flipping out and screaming at the birds. And yeah, shining bright example of 5 years clean. I had no program. I had no God. And, you know, I remember, you know, that was a big turning point for me. And, you know, I remember screaming at the birds because they were too happy. Fuck you, you goddamn birds. Fuck you. Chirp, chirp, chirp. Fuck you. And that was me, you know, and the joggers are like, need any help? And I'm like, no, you keep running there, brother. And that saying I said earlier, there'll come a time when no human power can keep you clean, shot through my brain. And that's when I hit my knees and asked God for help. And so I got to say, real recovery started for me. I mean, I'd gotten a few things, you know, the only thing I had going for me was I knew I couldn't go back to the life I had, then I'd die for sure. So at 5 years, that's when I got the sponsor and started on this incredible, amazing journey. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm still on that path, you know, I mean, me and the ex just started talking again after a year of not, and that's kind of cool, but I didn't really see that coming, you know, and I don't believe in coincidence, the synchronicity of life. Things happen as they're supposed to. And there's this power that you can tap into called the universe, God, whatever your higher power is, it's a higher power of your understanding. And you can tap into that power. And sometimes I see the synchronicity of my life, like the way things unfold in the last few weeks was just really amazing. So between 5 and 10 was a lot of work. And I know I talked about my mom. I better check the time because I can be a long-winded bastard. Oh, I got plenty of time. Between 5 and 10 years for me was a lot of work. I had to get outside help. I had to get into therapy. And, you know, I started working the steps actively with this guy. And he was always asking me about my parents. And I'm like, oh, we don't talk about them. And I'm not gonna. And he was like, okay, we'll get back to that one. And he was very patient with me, and you know, I was working with him for years, and he'd always bring it up. And then one time we were hanging out like almost every other night, going out to dinner and going to a meeting and hanging out with him and his friends. This guy was completely different than me. He wasn't into the same things I was. You know, he was a different soul, but the AA NA was the thing we had in common in the steps. And you know, I liked what he had. And this is another thing. Around the time I asked him, I'm working downtown. Like, ugh, that's a trip. The only thing I ever knew about working downtown San Francisco was to go down there and pull burglaries. Now I'm working at PG&E, being a computer guy. It's like, how the hell did this happen? So I meet this guy at the downtown meetings, you know, and where does he start working? In my building. He's working like 8 floors up in my building. So, you know, that's another, like, you know, God shot right there, you know. And we started hanging out and working together. And about a few years into it, he kept jamming me up on this. And he was like saying, don't you know that hate and fear is a poison that's going to kill you? And I didn't quite get that at first. But then every meeting we went to was on step 8 or 9. 8 is making a list of all those people we had hurt, and 9 is making the amends. And every meeting we went to was on 8 or 9. It was crazy. And he comes up to me one night while I'm at this meeting. He puts his hands on my shoulders and goes, "Are you getting a clue yet?" And it was like, oh, okay. So, you know, I got sick of myself and this, you know, and having that anger in me. And I asked him, "So what do I do?" And I hadn't talked to my mom at that point for about 14, 15 years. And he goes, "Write her little notes." So I did that. Wrote her little notes. "Hi, Mom. It's your son. Here's my number. I'm doing pretty good these days. I'm clean." And sent that off. And I didn't hear nothing for a while. But in the process of sending the notes to her, mailing them to her, I started to write more and more. Like, you know, there's something missing from my life, and I think it's in my relationship with you. And I'm sorry about things that happened between us. And I told her a little bit more about what I was doing, but they went unanswered for like a month or two. And I don't think she trusted me. And she had every reason not to trust me because I conned her and stole from her. And one day I get a phone call and it's her. And she's like, "Jeffrey, this is your mother." And I'm like, that's a little bit too much too soon right there. And she goes, "I've been getting the notes and I want to meet you. How about tomorrow?" I'm like, okay. So I call my sponsor immediately and I go, "What do I do?" And he goes, "What do? Get over there." And I go, "Well, what am I going to say?" "Don't worry about it. Just get over there." I'm like, all right. So the next day came, I was sweating bullets. Now she lived like 6 blocks away from me and I never saw her. So I drove down there. I don't know why, but I drove down sweating bullets the whole way. I get to her house and I knock on the door and, this woman that comes up to hear on me, pulls back the blind. She's looking me up and down. She's like doing the double take on me. And I felt like I was in a line. If I had to turn around and show her, I didn't have lift up my coat. I didn't have nothing. And she lets me in. Now, I haven't seen this woman in 15 years. And my first thought was, this is the woman I've hated all these years. You know, I remembered a lot of stuff that happened to me as a kid, you know, and it doesn't matter what happened, you know. It's just like I had to forgive her. Forgiveness is a big part of this program. It frees you up with so much stuff, you know. And today, it doesn't matter what happens in my life. I practice the principles in all my affairs. When bad shit happens, thank you, God, I have an opportunity to practice the principles and be a good guy, even in the face of this adversity or whatever. When good stuff happens, thank you, God, I can work the principles around this and be okay with it. You know, and it doesn't matter what's going on with me. As long as I can practice the principles of my life to move forward, everything works out. Everything. I guarantee it. So anyway, in my mom's house, and we sit down, and we're staring at each other. And she goes, "Why did you stay away for so long?" And I go, "Because I hated you." And she goes, "Why?" I've been waiting for that question for a long time. I had a shopping list ready to go. Remember when I was 4? And that didn't happen. I prayed a lot on the way down there to guide me in my actions for what I would say. So what happened was when she asked me why, of course, all that stuff went through my head. But what came out of my mouth was, "It doesn't matter anymore why, Mom. What matters is we carry forth in some kind of relationship because I love and I care for you." And I couldn't believe I said the words. I'm like looking around going, "Who said that?" And we've staring at each other, what seemed like a half an hour, which is only about a minute. And we both started crying, like deep down, snot flying, tears flying, the whole bit. And in that moment, I'd forgiven her for everything she had done to me, real and or imagined, because, you know, I'm a junkie. I can make some shit up. And, you know, she was my friend again, and I was her son, and I got my mom back, and she got her son back, and she was really curious. Like, one of the first things she said is, "You look so different." I'm like, "Well, yeah, I've been clean for almost 10 years. And she was like, "What?" If anybody knows me well, it was my mom, because I used to use her house as a shooting gallery. I stole stuff from her. I conned her out of money. That's the kind of guy I was. I didn't care about anything else. So she was very curious, like, "How did you do that?" You know, and I told her the whole story, how I ended up in the courtroom and blah, 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 blah. And she goes, "Man, I am so proud of you." And she didn't really say that much before. My father died as a result of this disease. I come from a whole family of dope fiends and drunks. My mom was the only one that was, she drinks, but you know, one drink a day. I don't call that like a total alcoholic, but so, you know, for the last 10 years of her life, I got to be the son I never was. She was a mom. And we went out and did things and went out to eat. And she had a lot of friends all over the San Francisco, and we would walk everywhere. And she'd introduce me to these people. And someone was like, "I didn't even know you had a son." She said, "I didn't know either." And she didn't, you know, she thought I was going to die. She told me to stay away from her, and I did. And, you know, so that's just one episode of, you know, how, you know, this thing we have here has helped me, you know, to open up more and be a part of this thing called life, you know, which I wanted nothing to do with, because all I did was run my way, you know, and forget whoever, but anybody gets in my way, forget about it, man. And, you know, I did a lot of hurtful things before I got here, a lot of bad stuff, hurt a lot of people, you know, and I ran with a crew of guys that did all that stuff with me. And out of all of us, there's only one other guy left alive, and I could be dead, you know. So I always remember where I come from, and I never forget the gift that this program has given me, a way to live, which far exceeds anything I could have come up with. You know, and I've had a lot of episodes, you know, a lot of hurtful moments in my clean time, and a lot of good moments, you know. And right now everything is really good, man. You know, the breakup gave me bad depression for a while, and we all know that, you know, things that, you have a loved one and all of a sudden it's not there anymore. And anyway, but you know, I've always been an animal guy. Like, I got two cats here, and I had some cats before. Here's another story of God having a sense of humor. And your higher power can be anything, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, man. And I had these two cats where I lived before, and one of them was like really thirsty all the time and drinking water. And all the time, I'd have a cup of water, cat would follow me all over the house. I'm like, "What's wrong?" So I took him to the vet. Turns out I had a diabetic cat. And I'm like, "What do you do for a diabetic cat?" And over the phone, they goes, "Well, you got to inject him with insulin." I'm like, "What?" "Yeah, you got to have an insulin U100, a rig, more or less." You know, and I'm like, "Oh man, I don't want these things in my house." But it was for my cat, you know. So they go, "You better come down, we'll show you how to do it." So I go down there, they got a fake cat, and they got like all these rigs laid out and a couple of bottles of w look like water, but it, you know, to me it looked like bottles of morphine. And they go, "Here you do, you pull up the cat's fur around his neck, and you shoot it under their skin." So, you know, but I didn't know that. I thought, you know, before the appointment, like, how do you hit a cat, man? You pull his arm out and spank his arm a little bit to get a vein. "Come on, man, kitty, get that vein." And I didn't know. So they're showing me how to do it, and they're going, "Now we got to watch you do it." And I'm like, "Well, okay, I don't think this is going to be a problem." So, and they're like, "You did that a little too good. You had another cat with diabetes, didn't you?" I'm like, no. So that was just one episode in my recovery, and I had a box of rigs in my house at 20 years sober, and it was all for my cats. Didn't bother me at all, but my friends kind of freaked if they saw them. "That's a trigger." I'm like, "Not for me, it's for my cat." I knew it was saving my cat's life, you know. I didn't want him to die. And you know, so this is an amazing life we have, you know. I mean, I can't say enough good things about what's happened to me in recovery. You know, and I'm still recovering in so many ways. I'm still learning. The last 2 years were really hard for me, you know, depression and, you know, but like I did, I just take it back to basics when things get rough. You know, okay, step one, powerless. What are you powerless over? People, places, and things. I'm powerless over my thoughts. I have no control over the thoughts in my head. They're going to come and go. The only thing I have control over is what do I do about it? What do I do with the action? You know, I admit you know, there's two parts to that step. We admitted we're powerless over our disease and that our lives have become unmanageable. And like, you have to admit complete defeat to this thing, or it's just not going to work. So, you know, when shit comes up, I'm powerless over it. And the unmanageability, I always think, is what's in my head, you know. And that segues right into step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So right from the get, you admit you're completely defeated and that you're immediately taken to a space or a step that has you thinking about a higher power. And it's anything greater than yourself, you know. So like, that's what I did. I've taken it back to basics so many times and it's never failed me. But above all, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I learned how to do just the next right thing. When the fear hits, it's like the best thing I can do is nothing. Because any decision I make based on that fear is going to be the wrong one every time. And I've proved it to myself because I was such a knucklehead around here for so many years. You know, it took me a while. I didn't know how to do this, you know, and all I know how to do now is go to meetings. I work for myself now, and that's a blessing. People actually let me in their house. And some of them have rugs laid out, and I'm telling them more about their rugs than they know. They're like, oh, you had a rug business? Yeah, you could say that. And life is good, you know. Third step turned our will and our lives with the care of God as we understood him. And that's as you understand them. And it's like, so, you know, my sponsors got me writing a lot about what went down in the last couple of years and the loneliness and abandonment I felt, you know, and it doesn't matter how much time you get around here. Life's going to happen, whether you like it or not. And the experience, I always say this too, the experience I go through will definitely help somebody else that's going through the same thing. And they don't know that they can stay clean through it. Just like people took me aside when, you know, when jobs would vanish or times of no money or emotional distress, you know, whatever it is, you know, I've always learned from that. And it's gotten me one step further, you know, and that's the power of the program, man. Our experiences will benefit others. What time is it now? Okay, it's about time for me to shut up. You know, and it's the coolest thing ever. And I had no idea, you know, I fought this thing for a while, like when I was in jail and when I was in the courtroom. And then when I got to Walden House, I didn't think any of this thing was possible for me. I thought I'd done too much dope. I'd done too much of this. I'd done too much of that. This will not work. And it works for everybody. The only requirement is you've got to want this. So my suggestion to anybody that hasn't gotten into the steps would be get into the steps and start doing this thing and be a part of this life. You know, I still live under the radar in so many ways, but I am a part of life, you know, so I show up. That's all I know how to do is just show up and be positive, you know, and it's like, I always get those thoughts in my head. Doesn't matter, you know, like when, shit's going to happen. I don't know any better way to put it. Stuff happens. Like I'm in business meetings sometimes and they don't always go my way. And it's like, you know, because I'm planning a job in a house or something, or I'm putting a network up somewhere and all of a sudden somebody changes their mind about something and I'm not doing the job anymore, or the dynamics of the job change. And my first thought is to say something about it, you know, and then I'm like, nope. You practice the principles and listen to what they say. And then, you know, if there's a chance for you to respond to anything, say it nicely and with love, you know. And that's gotten me through so much stuff because it's not about me, man. It's not about my will. You know, I'm lucky to still be here, son. I'm lucky to have the job I do. You know, this is what allows me to travel so much. You know, it's like I work a month or two and then I take a month off and go somewhere. And it's amazing, you know, I never had this kind of life before. I used to always dream about going to Thailand, you know, before I got sober, because the dope is good over there, whatever, you know. Yeah, I'm gonna make it to Thailand, you know, I'm gonna be there someday. And, oh God, never nothing, you know. I think that's where I met you, over there somewhere, Nikolai. I don't know if I met you, but somewhere, maybe just through the internet. But you know, now I travel. The last trip I went on was China, Laos, Burma, and Vietnam. And it was amazing. You know, I'm in the middle of, here's how, another thing God works in my life. Last story I'll tell you. I'm in the middle of Vietnam. I have no idea where I am. I just go sometimes and get there and wonder, okay, now what? You know, I just kind of go with the flow. No meetings anywhere on that. I was on an island, but there were statues of Buddha everywhere. And, so I would just go to the statues of Buddha and hang out there for a while. And I came home one day and there was these two guys from Norway sitting on the steps, and they're very friendly. I'm Kim and this is Volja. I'm like, hey, I'm Jeff. How you doing, man? They're going, we're going to walk. You walk with us? I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. So they stop in at a liquor store and they're like, do you want anything? And I'm like, as long as it's not beer or alcohol. And they're like, oh, you do not drink? We are 12 steppers too. In the middle of Vietnam, I meet a couple of guys from the fellowship. And that's how this thing works. And so we go everywhere on the island together. And it was so cool having a couple of guys in the program there with me that I didn't even know, you know, because I was getting kind of squirrely over there in my mind. But anyway, I think it's time for me to shut up. And it's a good life, man. And I'm so grateful for what I've been given. And I practice that gratitude by being of service and helping others. And thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks.